Good morning. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Anyone who watches or reads the news and also watches TV cop shows probably has figured out that there's a fair amount of difference between how TV investigators solve a crime and how crimes are actually solved.
Forensic science has long been the basis for popular primetime television, from Jack Klugman's classic Quincy character in the 1970s and 80s to the various versions of CSI that have aired more recently.
It turns out that reality is equally as interesting. Diana Johnson has watched those shows, but she's also seen the work in real life as a forensic scientist with the New Jersey State Police. Today, she teaches the next generation of forensic scientists at Marion University in Fond du Lac, and she's with us in the studio now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I was looking back at your background, and I gather you were a forensic serologist for 7 years with the New Jersey State Police. Let's start there. What is a forensic serologist?
Well, forensic serology is examining evidence for presence of biological fluids. So we're looking for blood and semen, saliva, etc. And typically that's sexual assault cases, homicides, breaking and enterings, etc.
So this is the kind of stuff that you see all the time on TV cop shows. What evidence
Absolutely.
Did the perpetrator leave behind?
That's right. And in New Jersey, it was a little different because the DNA lab was separate. But here in Wisconsin, the DNA scientists also do the serology. So it's a little different depending on what state you're in.
So especially given how much DNA has become a part of the equation, this is a huge job these days.
Absolutely, it is. It's a very exciting field. It's a growing field. There's a lot of students going into it. And it's essential. It'll always be an important area.
Well, and so as I was looking back, I gather you have also done work in the area of forensic entomology.
Well, forensic entomology, I never did casework. It's always been a fascinating subject for me. So I've been active in the organization, the North American Forensic Entomology Association. It's just a great topic, a great group of people involved in it. So I've always found it fascinating.
Well, I suspect people had no idea that this field even exists. What is a forensic entomologist study?
Well, a forensic entomology is the study of insects.
Right.
So a forensic entomology takes the study of insects and applies it to legal issues. So when you think of forensic entomology, most people think of trying to establish the time of death. So if you find a maggot on a body, because maggots will feed on bodies, certain maggots, and you figure out how old that maggot is, then you know how old that body is, how long it's been exposed to insect activity.
And this makes a lot more sense than the first thing that I thought of, which is that this was the study of dead insects and trying to find out how they died.
No, it's not that.
So maggots, other insects that are involved in the study of the cause or time of death?
Primarily flies, immature flies or maggots, but also beetles. Also play a part. There are certain beetles that will be in and around a dead body.
What got you into forensic science in the first place?
Forensic entomology actually got me into forensic.
Really?
So I was
found a maggot somewhere? And
Well, no, I was interested in entomology. I took entomology in college as a last ditch. That's the only class open. And I transferred into the college, and I had to pick a class, and I picked that one. And it's one of those moments where you're in class, and you're like, where has this been all my life? You know, just I loved entomology. So I worked a little bit in the field of entomology, and then I went to school for it. And I was at Washington State University for a master's in entomology. And while I was there, I found out that this field called forensic entomology existed. And it just fascinated me. So then I found out that back home in New Jersey, the forensic lab was hiring, and I thought, well, close enough. So I applied, and fortunately, I was hired, and I enjoyed working there for just over 7 years. Yeah.
And you could keep forensic entomology as kind of a hobby.
Exactly. And my primary responsibilities at work was forensic serology.
As we said, you worked in this field for the state of New Jersey. Now you teach this work to college students. How has the field most changed since you were in the place that your students are now, if at all?
Well, more advances in forensic DNA, for sure. So we're seeing more, we're seeing an introduction of different markers and different collection techniques in DNA. And also just a growing interest in the field. It just keeps becoming more fascinating to people, I think.
The legal system sometimes talks about the CSI effect.
Yes.
That juries think investigators should be able to solve crimes and find evidence in the same ways people are used to seeing them found or solved on television. How much do forensic scientists hear that? I mean, do they get pressure from the uniformed officers to find things that maybe you can't really find?
You know, that may have been an issue early on in forensic science, but in my personal opinion and experience, in the New Jersey State Police anyway, I didn't feel that pressure at all. It was a civilian-staffed lab, and the police agencies were separate. I've never experienced that kind of pressure. But the CSI effect, I believe some people say it doesn't exist, but I think it's real. I think that that it's not just juries; it's lawyers, it's judges. They have an expectation that forensic science can just magically come up with the answers, and unfortunately, it can't.
What are the biggest areas within that seem like if you tuned into CSI or any one of those kinds of shows, what makes your hair stand up on end?
For me, it's the really simple things. Like you see the investigators on the shows collecting evidence at the scene, really bloody scene, and then they answer their cell phone with their gloves on, all up in their face. Just things like that bother me. But the other aspects include turnaround time. So your typical forensic lab will try to shoot for a turnaround time of a month, 30 days. That's about average. And so that means that an item of evidence is brought to the lab, and the agency should expect to hear from the lab with a report in 30 days. In the shows, of course, they have to condense it down to however long the show. So that kind of skews the perception of time, but also the techniques that they use. They're based in real science. The shows, they do their research. They have some background information on what is capable, what forensic science is capable of, and they start from there, and then they kind of leap off, and they have unrealistic they show unrealistic methods and techniques.
Well, and I wonder if there are some areas that forensic science actually at some point catches up to what TV shows, you know, sort of posit, like science fiction becomes science facts.
You know, you mentioned that, and the first thing that comes to my mind is Sherlock Holmes. So Sherlock Holmes is, it's a fictional figure, but Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, added in techniques that at the time weren't invented, but Sherlock Holmes was conducting them, and now they're standard in the field. It was really ahead of his time. So yes, there is a possibility for that.
How much of what forensic scientists do involves looking for and collecting evidence at places where crimes have just happened, and how much involves looking back at evidence in new ways?
That's an excellent question, and I think, I think the bulk of it is current casework, and the investigators, the crime scene investigators, are skilled. Typically, are skilled police officers who are trained in crime scene investigation. Now, depending on your agency and your state, you can have skilled and trained non-officers, so your civilian crime scene investigators. So that varies, but that would be the bulk of it. But are there opportunities to take a cold case or an older case and apply updated techniques? Absolutely. And there's an agency or a group called the VDOC Society in Philadelphia. I have some friends who are involved in this. It's a group of experts. Most of them are retired, who listen to presentations of cold cases and apply their knowledge to that cold case. So there are other groups like that, but other units who are specially assigned to cold cases. And labs certainly do examine items from cold cases. However, I'd say the bulk would be current cases.
What do you think it is important for, you know, just regular people to know about forensic science work? Say, you know, you sit down on an airplane or a train or something, and someone sits down next to you and mm-hmm. strikes up a conversation, and they find out what you do. And what are the things that they ask, and what would you hope that people know about the work that forensic scientists do?
Well, I hope that they see it as important and valuable and trustworthy. And, you know, unfortunately, there have been some media attention on forensic scientists who have been behaving badly. But the vast majority of forensic scientists are there to serve the public and to do their best at that. So mistakes can happen, but the value of the science is tremendous. And I hope that they can keep a realistic viewpoint on it and understand that there are limitations.
What's the greatest frustration of a forensic scientist when you or someone else is working in a lab? What makes, you know, putting aside CSI, you know, what makes life hard for a forensic scientist?
Boy, that's an excellent question. I think from my own experience that it would be just the sheer amount of work. The case backlog can be tremendous. And, you know, if I had a magic wand, I'd provide every state and agency a beautiful brand new state-of-the-art lab with 100 extra scientists. But unfortunately, you know, right now that can't happen. But I think it would just be the amount of work and the need to deal and handle with all those cases to get them out there and to allow the justice system to move forward.
You're studying things like bodily fluids in your spare time. Maybe you're studying maggots.
Yeah.
Do you ever get creeped out by this work?
You know, not really. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you hear about a case or I have at Marin University, I have a research field where we have some decomposing pigs to study entomology. And every once in a while, you see it for what it is. You're like, wow, that's a pig I'm collecting out of. But no, typically it's, you know, you really look at the end goal, and whatever you need to do to get to the end goal is what motivates you and allows you to do it.
I would imagine you have to, at some level, compartmentalize, you know, put aside what has happened to this person or this pig.
Absolutely.
And concentrate on what you're doing now.
Absolutely. And to see the moment for what it is right now, and what can you do in this moment to help prevent such things in the future and to help achieve justice for whoever the case is involved in the case.
So the medical examiner on TV is at the crime scene or one of the investigators. He's got blood all over his gloves and his cell phone rings. What should he do?
Take off his gloves and leave the scene and, you know, make sure you have some hand sanitizer on you.
Well, Diana Johnson, it's really interesting stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. This has been a pleasure.
Diana Johnson is an assistant professor and chair of the Forensic Science Department at Marion University. She'll talk about how forensic science has been used in some notorious Wisconsin cases on November 10th at the next Science on Tap lecture at the Milwaukee Public Museum. There is more information at wuwm.com.